Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. I am your host, Dan Roberts, and we are excited to be joining you today as the Buffalo Bills kick off their 2025 training camp in Rochester, New York, St. John Fisher University. We all know what this time of year means. Hope, positivity reign supreme, but also we know that cool fall crisp air is about to approach as we get ready for meaningful regular season football here with your 2025 edition of your beloved Buffalo Bills. Lots of great news and notes coming out of camp, all stuff that we're going to get into as the Bills progress throughout their preseason, plus a lot of our own observations as well. You'll notice that I'm still solo today. JJ still taking a hiatus from the pod, but he will be back as we approach the regular season. So what we have for you today is a little bit of table setting, a little bit of an appetizer, as you will, as we approach the preseason here. The Bills have just opened camp. In most sports books, the betting favorite to win the Super Bowl. But before we can even approach that point, there's a lot that has to go right for the Buffalo Bills this season, and a lot of wrongs from last year that need to be corrected, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. So as we begin to set the table, it's list season. So we're going to give you our top five players who we think need to take a step forward for the Buffalo Bills this season in order for them to finally reach their ultimate goal of winning a Super Bowl. If you listen to a lot of other Buffalo Bills podcasts, there are some names on this list that are probably going to seem familiar. And then there's some other names that you're probably not thinking about as well. Not only do these players need to take a step for the Buffalo Bills to ultimately achieve what we all want them to, Super Bowl championship before we die, but also the performance of a lot of these players is also going to have a large scale impact on what the team looks like in 2026 and beyond. So it's always good to talk about the short term, but like Brandon being in this roster, an eye to the long term always for the Buffalo Bills. We hope that you stick around after this segment as well, because we've got a wonderful interview with our friend of the pod, not friend of the Bills, our resident Patriots expert, Brandon Bennett. This is actually an interview we've had in the can since about Father's Day. And Brandon had some really insightful comments that I think carry through into training camp this season for one of the Buffalo Bills' most noted AFC East rivals. Lots of positivity for New England Patriots fans that Brandon's going to get into, and he's going to give you some sneaky sleeper picks as well for those of you that are into fantasy. All right, so please, by all means, stick around after this segment is over and catch our interview with Brandon Bennett. So we dive into the list here as the Buffalo Bills are diving in to their 2025 training camp at St. John Fisher University. Number five, the player that we feel like has a lot at stake, not just for this season, but for their role with the team moving forward. Our number five pick heading into the into preseason this year is one Matt Milano. Milano has been a stalwart, a roster staple, almost emblematic as much as Poyer and Hyde were of this culture shift that we have seen in the McDermott era. He's an absolute animal on the defensive side of the ball when he is healthy. But that last caveat has been most of the problem with Milano has been his availability. He is now on the wrong side of 30 years old. And a sneaky headline this offseason that got a little bit of traction early, but I think a lot of us forgot about, is that the Buffalo Bills reworked his contract so that he is no longer financially tethered to this team beyond this season. He is effectively in a walk year and took a pay cut this year as well. There is a world where Matt Milano gets a Joey Bosa type of treatment, where he is on a pitch count and maybe in the game in the regular season in crucial situations, but this could be the opportunity for Dorian Williams to kind of take a step and enter that starting role at outside linebacker for the Buffalo Bills. It serves two purposes. One, the Buffalo Bills absolutely need Matt Milano at his most healthy if they're going to effectuate the defense that they want to. But two, as you're talking about a long-term view of this roster, they have a decision to make about Dorian Williams as well. Williams had his struggles and continued to have his struggles in coverage, though we saw some improvements as the season went on last year. After Milano came back for the last 4 weeks of the season, Williams was effectively put into mothballs for a large part of the regular season. All that being said, he still led the team in tackles. I could actually see a world where Matt Milano, depending on how healthy he is coming out of training camp, depending on what the Bills are seeing in his coverage ability coming out of camp this year, I could see a world where Matt Milano is actually put on a pitch count in the regular season to keep him healthy, but also to give Dorian Williams some valuable reps in this system as well, and really craft him into a true successor for Milano, should Milano and the Bills separate after this season. I mean, listen, Milano showed a little bit of juice in the postseason. He looked like he was healthier during OTAs this year. But the fact of the matter is, his coverage ability really took a step back as he was coming back from injury last season. In the four games he played in the regular season, the passer rating allowed when he was the nearest targeted defender last year was 158.3. For those of you who are unaware, that is a perfect passer rating for opposing QBs going up against Matt Milano, who has been one of the best, if not the best, coverage linebackers in the league. If he is not 100%, if he's even 80%, Milano is still a viable starter in this league, but the Bills need 100% of him ready to go in January and February if they're going to reach their ultimate goal. So I think there's a lot riding on camp for Milano this year. So moving on from Milano, we're going to stick with the Buffalo Bills defense. This is a name that has been bandied about a lot by both fans and Bills media as someone who absolutely needs to take a step this season, and that is Cole Bishop. Cole was a second-round pick out of Utah a couple of seasons ago, someone who we on the pod, me and JJ, lauded. Super athletic, super fast. He's just a dude that's got some versatility to his game and fit the physical profile, I think, that we were looking to fill after the team parted ways with Jordan Poyer a couple of years ago. Started the offseason in 2024 with injuries, really kind of derailed his development. This is a meaty secondary defensive set of schemes and concepts for someone to take on. And we have seen throughout the years how important it is for Buffalo Bills safeties to be communicating with the rest of the defense on what they're seeing. Bishop improved remarkably as the season went on. And I think through OTAs, it has been kind of taken as fact that he is going to be the starting safety opposite of Taylor Rapp heading into this season. That being said, he still needs to earn the job, but then he also has to prove beyond camp and into the season that he is actually assimilated to the scheme in the way that is needed. You know, him and Rapp, I feel like they bring a similar skill set to the table. Both are better when they play closer to the box. And Cole Bishop, just because of his closing ability, because of his raw athleticism, really can fit a lot of run fits running downhill. That was the role that Rapp fit a lot last year playing outside of Hamlin. I don't think people appreciate the fact of how great Taylor Rapp was at diagnosing plays from the high safety position and then running downhill to stop what was a 10-yard run from becoming a 12-yard run or a 7-yard screen from becoming a 15-yard screen. I think with Bishop, he's got the ability to do that as well. And I think we often underrate as a pairing him and Rapp, Rapp's ability to play in coverage. While Rapp, yes, is better close to the line of scrimmage like Bishop is, this team clearly values Rapp in kind of that Micah Hyde role. And I give the benefit of the doubt to this coaching staff because they have taken players with a limited tools or what we thought was a certain profile coming from another team, and they've really molded them successfully into what they've needed to be. So if we can take Taylor Rapp, his ability to hunt for the ball, pair it with a Cole Bishop with freakish athleticism and ability to close out plays downhill, I think you've got a really, really sneaky good safety pairing this year. But it all hinges on Bishop being able to fully assimilate to this scheme and being able to take that next step here in his second season, because we're at the point where the Buffalo Bills can no longer wait 3, even 4 seasons for some of these top 100 draft picks to fully flesh out into form. So this is a big year for Cole Bishop to take that next step, not just for his own sense of stake on the roster, but also for what the Buffalo Bills need out of this safety pairing. 3-2. Again, names that a lot of Buffalo Bills fans have talked about and honestly could probably be interchangeable at this point. Keon Coleman at 3 and Dalton Kincaid at 2. Brandon Bean made it very well known that he did not care at all what we thought of his lack of offseason moves in improving the wide receiver room. And at the end of the day, the criticisms were probably fair, but I think what is apparent is that this front office really believes in the skill players they have assembled. They believe in the ceiling that a lot of these players have and that they can reach in order to finally help the Buffalo Bills offense add that one dimension that it has been lacking since they parted ways with Stephon Diggs, and that's a legitimate threat on the outside. We saw it last year, and we've been saying it for a couple of seasons. The Buffalo Bills needed to develop a run game to get teams out of this too high shell they were constantly playing. It would open up a lot of cover one and cover three looks for the Bills, a lot of man looks for the Bills, where in the past, Josh has been an absolute man destroyer. Last season, Josh was still pretty good against man, but the Buffalo Bills faced the highest percentage of man coverage in the league. Teams were basically saying, we don't fear your weapons on the outside, and we're going to collapse, and we're going to make running the ball, and we're going to make attacking the middle of the field through the passing game very difficult. And there were times, despite the amount of points that the Bills would put on the board, where it felt really hard sometimes for this offense to operate. We coined the phrase last year that the Bills were the champions of the workmanlike 30, where it didn't always look good from drive to drive, but they were able to pull it together for enough successive drives in order to put some serious points on the board. Add to the fact that the defense last year were absolute ball hawks and maniacs in the turnover game, and you were giving Josh simply more opportunities. This year, the Bills are probably going to face a very similar setup. They're going to face a lot of cover one. They're going to face a lot of man coverage. Teams are going to gear towards stopping the run. They're going to dare you to beat them on the outside. And there are some teams where if you have two reliable corners, like let's say Baltimore, who the Buffalo Bills will be playing in week one with Wiggins and Jair Alexander. Then you also have, oh, by the way, Marlon Humphrey, number three in havoc ratings last year amongst all cornerbacks, playing in that slot nickel position, who can either crash the box or make life really difficult for a Dalton Kincaid type or a Khalil Shakir type. If you're playing the Houston Texans and you've got Lassiter and you've got Stingley on the outside, the reality is those teams, also coincidentally, the teams the Bills probably need to overcome in order to reach their ultimate goal here this season of winning a Super Bowl, those teams have defenses that are ideally suited to stopping the Bills' offense and a lot of these condensed sets that they run. So the key has to be Coleman and Kincaid, and you can put him in whatever priority order that you want. Coleman has to prove that he can be a weapon on the outside. The Buffalo Bills absolutely need somebody that can just decompress a lot of the coverages that they're facing. Somebody who the other teams now feel like they need to cheat a safety to shadow or bracket over the top of and really open some things up in the middle of the field for one Dalton Kincaid. Both players also need to improve their catch rate. Kincaid's catch rate last year was 64% and Coleman was 50.9%. But that has to start with Keon being a more available target and being a more, I think, formidable target where other teams need to key in on him. That'll open up things in the middle of the field with Dalton Kincaid. And honestly, Kincaid got his opportunities around his injuries last year, and he just was not making the most of them with that excessively high drop rate. If he just hauls in another 20-25% of the passes and opportunities we know he's going to get, he can give the Buffalo Bills the middle of the field back and with his ability to find those soft spots in the zone. The chemistry behind with him and Josh wasn't always great. Again, last season, you could chalk that up to a lot of injuries that he was facing. But I think at the end of the day, ultimately, you need these two guys to step up. Keon on the outside to give the Bills a legitimate threat that can spread defenses out a little bit and decompress a lot of the coverages they're facing. And then Dalton Kincaid to give the Buffalo Bills the middle of the field back. If Coleman takes that step and Kincaid can bring back a formidable threat or be a partner threat with Khalil Shakir and exposing the middle of the field, I don't know how you stop this Buffalo Bills offense. I really don't. With their ability to run the ball down your throat with this great offensive line and bell cow back and James Cook, they figure it out on the outside and they figure it out with Coleman and they figure it out in the middle with Kincaid. This is going to be look a lot easier for the Buffalo Bills to put 30 on. This might not be the year of the workmanlike 30. This could potentially be the year of the easiest 30 burgers that you see. So those two guys, though, need to take that step in order for that to happen. So number one, we've gone through Milano at 5, Bishop at 4, Coleman and Kincaid 3 and 2 respectively. Number one is not a name that a lot of folks have been talking about, but is someone, because of our love of line play, both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, I felt appropriate to put here. And that's Osiris Torrence. Now, hear me out. Torrence has been excellent. He has been above average for sure. He is a people mover, unlike anybody they have currently on that offensive line. His run blocking tape is absolutely teachable. So if you are a high schooler, you're a college coach, you want to teach your interior guards how to run block, you should be doing it with Osiris Torrence. Pass blocking is another issue. And this is a place where a lot of metric sites and a lot of metric houses are split. EFF, for example, take what you want with a lot of their rankings. Me and JJ often throw them out the window. Gave him an overall pass block rating of 64 last year, which is somewhere around average. They weren't in love with his technique. They weren't in love with his ability to stop more speedy type of pass rushers coming in. ESPN's pass block win rate had him as a top five guard, right? So he was preventing quick pressure from getting to Josh, and he was holding his blocks for at least 2.5 seconds. But he was really susceptible to a lot of sort of delayed blitzes, a lot of stunts. And when really good teams like the Ravens in the regular season and the postseason, and most notably in the AFC Championship on that final offensive play for the Buffalo Bills, when opposing teams are looking for the weak spot to attack in a gotta-have-it moment, a gotta-have-it blitz moment, they're looking at Osiris Torrence, fair or unfair. They look across that line. It's not Dawkins. It's not Brown. It's not Edwards, and it's not McGovern. They're looking at Torrence and being like, that's the guy that we can get to. And if you watch that final play against the Chiefs, you can see that they clearly wanted to put him in a blender. And the reality is this is a luxury to be talking about, that we have such a guard who is so talented entering his third season that he only needs to work on delayed blitzes and work on figuring out DB blitzes. But here's the reality. The Buffalo Bills play a ton of condensed formations. And the way you beat those condensed formations is by bringing in a DB blitz. Because everybody is closer to the line of scrimmage, that means the DBs are closer to the line of scrimmage, and it's easier for them to disguise coverage and come in on a blitz. And when they do, more often than not, Osiris Torrence is their target. This dude has the ability. I don't want to get too hyperbolic about Osiris Torrence, but Trey Smith just got paid $23 million. Landon Dickerson, a couple of seasons ago, got $21 million in average annual value. Just based off his tape and his production, if Osiris Torrence continues on the path that he is on this season, he's already in that $17 to $18 million AAV range, which means that as you look at the Buffalo Bills cap situation, if Torrence is to take that next step, he could potentially ascend to that $19 million, $20 million a year AAV when he comes up for a contract in a couple of years. What that means with the Bills cap situation is this: David Edwards, Connor McGovern, both are going to be free agents at the end, coming up here at the end of the season. James Cook, we know notably, is going to be a free agent at the end of the season as well. Osiris Torrence, 2 years from now. Out of those four guys, you probably only get two. And if I were to pick my two, I would want Torrence and I would want James Cook. But Torrence has to take that next step, where he is no longer the guy that situationally is going to get picked on for this squad. That's why he is our number one Buffalo Bill that has a lot to prove, not just in camp this season, but for the 2025 season. If he can turn the tide in a lot of those situational delayed blitz, DB blitz situations, he takes away another tool that opposing defenses have to mitigate this offense for the Buffalo Bills. And he sends a lot of teams back to the drawing board on how ultimately you're going to get those situational stops against what is otherwise a steamroller of an offense. And it has implications for what this line is going to look like in years to come. Appreciate you letting us get through our list as it is list and ranking season. We will now turn things over to our interview with Brandon Bennett, resident New England Patriots expert, about what his thoughts are on where the Patriots are going to land here in the 2025 NFL season. As always, folks, thank you for listening and go Bills. Today, we are very fortunate to be joined by one Brandon Bennett. Brandon, for many of you know, is our resident Patriots expert. We have brought him in today to talk a little bit about where the New England Patriots are at is they close out their mandatory minicamp. And there are more than just the usual parallels or crossroads or intersections, if you will, Brandon, happening between the Bills and the Patriots. It's not just that the Patriots have made a lot of moves this offseason in the hopes of challenging the Buffalo Bills for the AFC East crown. They have also brought on two very notable former Bills in Mac Collins and Stephon Diggs to try to jumpstart the development of their second-year QB in Drake May. So changes abound, new coaching staff, fresh new talent in the offensive and defensive rooms for the New England Patriots. Brandon, how are we feeling generally as the New England Patriots approach their summer break headed into July training camp?
Well, first of all, Dan, I just want to say thank you once again for having me on the pod. I really
against our better judgment,
here.
We are happy to have you back as well.
The other thing, before we move on, happy Father's Day. You are also a great father and a great family man. And I want to say that right here in front
of all
your fans.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Ditto for you, sir. It's actually very appropriate, come to think of it, that we are having this conversation on Father's Day. Because for so long, for 20 years, the daddies, if you will, of the AFC East were your illustrious New England Patriots. And over the last few years, the Buffalo Bills have taken on that mantle. So I'm excited to hear, sir, what you have to say about whether or not the New England Patriots are going to reclaim their daddy title. So there's lots of ways we're gonna work this Father's Day joke in, I'm pretty sure, throughout the course of the night.
It's got to be, yeah. There's going to be some surprises later on. So I can't wait for that. I do want to answer your question, though. I think with minicamp on the Patriots, I think there's a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of excitement. Drake May is looking really good, seems healthy, athletic, stayed in shape. So I think Pat's Nation, if I may, is pretty excited to see sort of what's ahead for New England this season. It's definitely
without a doubt. And we're gonna obviously talk about Drake May. Because he is kind of the fulcrum around which your fortunes in New England are going to revolve around. He is the sun to your earth, if you will. That being said, though, the New England Patriots have wisely built their offseason around developing May. They understand the talent that they drafted a couple years back, and they have decided they need to go all in while he's on his rookie contract window, but also in this crucial time to make sure he can develop in the right way. So many talented young QBs in the wrong system or the wrong situation, regardless of traits, regardless of tools, within these first couple of years, if the situation and talent around them is not correct, if it's not right, the scheme isn't right, offensive line situations matter so much to young QBs as well. They tend to develop bad habits. And I have to say, while people can feel a certain way about the Gerard Mayo firing, Brandon, I applauded the Patriots for realizing they were headed in the wrong direction if they were going to fully maximize Drake May's ceiling. So they pulled the trigger very quickly after having a lot of stability in that coaching room for many years under Belichick. Gerard Mayo is one and done. You bring in Mike Vrabel. He brings in some retreads in Josh McDaniels, most notably. But he also brings in some pretty exciting young coaching talent as well. Some familiar and unfamiliar names to the New England Patriots. And then once the coaching staff was in, they decided that they needed to upgrade the personnel, and they did. And I want to start there. And I want to start with arguably your most notable offensive addition this season in Stephon Diggs. Diggs on the wrong – listen, and it's funny that we're here because – right after the New England Patriots season ended and we were doing the autopsy about 3-4 months ago at this point, you guys, I asked you point blank, how would you feel about Stephon Diggs in New England? And you were hard pass. Has anything
and
changed?
I'm still
nothing
hard
has changed.
Pass.
Okay.
Not at all. No, and only was reaffirmed by, you know, the headlines. What was it, like a week ago at this point where it must have been a little bit longer than that, but where he was on a boat and
pink powder.
You know, that sort of that tomfoolery, you know, under the Belichick era would right. never have been allowed. I mean, talking about benched first three games of the season as punishment for something like that. So while I am excited for the team, I was a little disappointed, I think, in Vrabel's reaction to the situation. But then I, you know, from minicamp, I did watch the, some clips and highlights and stuff like that. He, you know, does look like he's in pretty decent shape. He was looking a little better than some of the other guys on the roster there. So who knows? I, you know, while I'm not overly optimistic, I'm not completely okay. out.
No,
either.
I think that's fair. I have a case for you about why Stephon Diggs is a good thing. This is going to be a different version of Diggs than what the Bills got when they traded a first-round pick for him way back in the day, getting him from Minnesota. Obviously, he's coming off a pretty devastating injury and a very short tenure with the Houston Texans. That being said, though, the way the Texans were using Diggs was very, very interesting. His utilization as a red zone weapon, but more as like kind of like this slot type of slash receiver that ate up just a lot of scenery in the middle of the field. He's not a guy I think you want to isolate against a team's best corner on the boundary anymore. But I think back to when Josh McDaniels was really cooking with that passing game in New England, the stuff he was doing, not just with tight ends, you've got Hunter Henry, right? But what he was doing with guys like Wes Welker and Julian Edelman, across the middle of the field, freeing them up in motion, a little bit ahead of its time, if you will. I actually think it's an ideal situation for Diggs to maximize. Granted, what is a diminishing talent set of skills right now, but to maximize that at this stage of his career, it feels like a really good fit. I don't think it's going to be copy and paste from the good old days, but you can see really clearly where he slots into the rest of this wide receiver room. Do you think, because the issues with Stephon Diggs have almost never been on the field, they've been off the field, and New England is a rebuilding team. Do you think the growing pains that the New England Patriots are going to be going through is going to spark any of that off the field, cryptic comment, cryptic social media post version of Stephon Diggs that could end up becoming an anchor on the locker room? Do you have any fears about that at all?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think it will. It's so likely to happen. You know, I just picture a bad loss where maybe he gets one target from May that, you know, was short yardage and a bad pass or something like that. That's all it's going to take for him to start spouting off on social media or doing something silly. I don't think he's going to Antonio Brown the Buccaneers, but, you know, again, I hope that some of the younger guys, Kyle Williams, for example, can learn something from a veteran like him. Hopefully he'll be a leader, but I think a lot remains to be seen, especially coming off of the injury.
Yeah, it's... I was always one of the, I guess you could call me a Stephon Diggs apologist, even after that Cincinnati Bengals game where he was on the sideline, just kind of arms open, looking at Josh at the end of that Cincinnati Bengals playoff loss a few years back. You know, I was like, listen, he's just a competitor and he wants to drive the rest of the team. I remember the DeMar Hamlin game where Hamlin suffered that devastating and almost life-ending injury in Cincinnati. And there was so much going on and so much cross information, misinformation. At one point on the broadcast, the broadcasters had said they had gotten the message from the NFL that the game was going to go on. And you can tell no one else on the field wanted to play. But that message had somehow gotten to the guys on the bench. And you saw Diggs grab his helmet, try to rally the guys, get them going. He's that kind of personality, right? He wants to win. He always wants to play. And he always wants to play his best. I think where the conflict is going to be is that his version of playing his best is all about volume. It's about opportunities. It's about multiple touches. And in Buffalo towards the end, you could see some of those games where he was just not a factor in the game plan whatsoever. You could tell that it started to wear on him. I don't know that you guys have necessarily a wide receiver room that's going to command a lot of targets away from him. And I'm very interested to see in training camp what some of your formations look like and where he lines up, because I actually don't think volume is going to be a problem. But it begs the question, if Stephon Diggs is your top targeted receiver on the wrong side of 30 coming off an ACL injury, is that going to be a successful situation for a young QB and Drake May to survive in? So, Brandon, let me ask you this. With Stephon Diggs, what is the best version of this passing offense you hope to see this season?
So I think the best version is, you know, and I this is my theory on what we're going to see, is a lot of spreading the ball. I don't see, you know, huge numbers games for any one individual player, especially Stephon Diggs. Now, you know, feeling down on him, but I think there's a lot of talent in the wide receiver core. I think some difficult decisions are going to have to be made in this offseason in terms of who from their wide receiving core they're going to keep. But folks like Jalen Polk, folks like Kyle Williams should see quite a bit of volume on the field alongside Stephon Diggs and Mac Hollins. You know, there's just so much talent there. So I think that's the best version, right? Keeping defenses guessing about who to cover, who's getting the ball this play.
Yeah, it could end up like that, especially if a guy like Kyle Williams, who you guys drafted out of, was San Diego State? Is that where he's out of?
Yeah, you would know better than
say
I would.
San Diego State, but I'm sure I'll get rudely corrected online if I'm wrong about that. You actually picked him in our Friends of the Pod mock draft, I think, in the third round. You went off board and you're like, listen, this is a dude I like. And he ended up coming home, yep, to you guys, which is great. Love his skill set in that offense. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I think that the best version of any offense really is that you've got multiple guys you can spread around to. I mean, we are the founders of Everybody Eats here in Buffalo. I just don't know. I don't know how quickly that's going to coalesce around a very, very, how do I put this diplomatically? A very, very strong presence in Stephon Diggs. I mean, it's a big reason I think why the Bills ultimately parted ways with him is they saw, similar to what you've identified, I think, in your wide receiver room, the opportunity for multiple guys to step up and be variable game to game on who it was you were going to target or feature. And I think they just knew in their heart of hearts that was not going to work with a guy like Diggs in the locker room. It'll be interesting to see if your theory comes to fruition and it ends up working out a little bit better for him in New England. Here's the thing I think you guys have going for you in that situation. Like, how many more stops is this guy really going to get in his NFL career? Again, he's been injured. He was losing a step before he was injured. He is a notorious, fair or not, and some people would say unfair, that are big Stephon Diggs fans, but he is a notorious, difficult personality, and he commands touches at a rate that maybe has surpassed his actual output on the field. So it'd be very interesting to see if he is not willing to take a back seat in New England, but if he's like starting to wake up to the realization that I may not have many more opportunities in this league for all the bridges that I have burned in my previous stops. Brandon, the wide receivers are going to be important for you guys, but I think the most important room that you guys have tried to put the focus on this season is the O-line. Your O-line last year, I think by a lot of metrics, was the worst in the league. Pass rush win rate, run block win rate, and I think most crucially, having a young QB under center, it was quick pressure under 2.5 seconds. You guys led the league in allowing quick pressure to get to Drake May. May, as a result, was able to flash a lot of spontaneous, really entertaining runs, utilizing his full athletic set. But I think you guys really want him, especially in McDaniel's offense, to let him feel like he can plant his feet and stand on firm ground when dropping back, when in play action, turning his back to the offensive line. So you guys did some stuff to upgrade the offense, but you still have some question marks. Cole Strange, is likely going to be a piece of the equation this year. The kid from Penn State you guys drafted last year, can't remember his name off the top of my head. I am struggling with New England Patriots today. But ultimately, you guys brought in some pieces that may or may not be helpful. Definitely upgrades. But my question for you is it enough, right? The Houston Texans thought they had their offensive line figured out last season with C.J. Stroud, and the Houston Texans were the third worst team in allowing quick pressures to get to Stroud last year. So we've seen second-year QBs with a lot of talent get derailed because they don't trust the protection in front of him. Is this offensive line good enough this year to help Drake May take that next step in his second season?
Yes, I do think that the O-line is good enough, you know, and that there's no doubt in my mind. First of all, not a whole lot that can get worse compared to last year.
It was really bad.
And the absolute lack of protection. You know, we talked then about how I was hoping that, you know, they would keep Drake on the sideline and let Brissett, you know, take the punches. Because there was, again, there was no protection in that backfield. But with the addition of Will Campbell, fourth overall out of this year's draft, I think it adds such a dynamic element and so much talent. And I think Will Campbell's going to be one of those players that just brings up the level of play from every guy around him. So, you know, I was watching minicamp and... Again, they're still figuring some things out as they, you know, would be at this point in the year. It's not a cause for concern. So, yes, 100%. I think the protection is going to be a lot better. Drake May is still going to have to get the ball out quick. I think this is going to be an up-tempo offense, but he's going to have the ability to do that.
Will Campbell was my favorite offensive tackle in this draft, and he was maybe the most mocked person to the New England Patriots at your slot in the draft this season at number four. And I hate that you got him because I do think he's an absolute unit. Our arm length be damned. I remember watching a lot of his tape two seasons ago. And I was like, who am I keeping an eye on in the college game for next season? So last season now as we speak, that could really pop and could really be a name that ascends. And I always look at those SEC guys because they're going up against the best edge rushers in the country, game in and game out. And again, whatever you want to say about his arm length, Will Campbell was going up against serious NFL talent every single Saturday that he played. And his pressure rate, his lack of sacks credited to him, this dude, his footwork, right? His violence at the point of attack is really impressive despite the arm length. Everything about his technique screams long-term starter. And because of his athletic profile, he's a guy long-term for you guys. If he ends up hitting at tackle, you could see kind of make that slide to guard as he ages gracefully, hopefully for you guys, into his career. And he could be an established starter on your unit for the next 10, maybe 11 years. I mean, he felt to me as much of a sure thing in this draft as anything. And I hate the fact that you guys got him. Like, you guys overall nailed your draft this season. And it was infuriating to me how much talent you ended up bringing in your rookie class. But Will Campbell, definitely the headliner, and was a really great draft for you guys. So, Brandon, let me ask you this. We've talked a little bit about the offensive line. We've talked about the wide receiver room. Who is the one addition on offense? So we're talking about the offensive side of the ball. I know you guys brought in Milton Williams. You've revamped this defense as well. But at the end of the day, it really is all about Drake May. So who is the player on the offensive side that you are the most excited to see suit up for your team this year?
Yes. So for me, that's an easy answer. That's Travion Henderson, the rookie running back. I think Antonio Gibson is out of the picture, out of the equation. I don't think he's going to be seeing any snaps. I think they're going to let Ramondre, you know, sort of be the workhorse in the beginning part of the season as Henderson is adjusting to the NFL. But I think we will see a mid-season takeover from him. He's so talented. tackle breaking speed. And I think, you know, we talked about the wide receivers already, but if they can't also get the running game going the way that Vrabel likes to do in his offenses, the wide receiving room is going to struggle in the exact same way. So, Travion Henderson, I think, is that X factor that this offense
and his ability to catch balls out of the backfield as well, is going to add like a really fun Danny Woodhead type element to this offense. I mean, and that's the thing about your offseason.
Yeah.
It is indisputable the amount of talent you guys have brought in to improve this roster. But as someone who has followed the Patriots as a result of their dominance in a division over the last 20 years against a team that I love in the Bills, like, you can also see with Vrabel having the legacy with the Patriots he does, with McDaniels having the legacy with the Patriots he does, you can see the blueprint from yesteryear being superimposed on this year's group. And some of that could be bias from us fans, as we are most familiar with that version of the Patriots. But you could really see how a lot of these guys slip in to some of these legacy type of roles in the McDaniels scheme that he likes to run. So it was a very old school New England Patriots offseason for you guys to me. But definitely with an eye on the future and an eye on doing big things again around your QB, who showed a lot of talent last year, a lot of talent. So, Brandon, your guys' win total, according to DraftKings, the over-under is sitting right now at 8.5. Market improvement from last year, where it was sitting at 3.5 in most sports books. Where do you think, at the end of the day, I'm going to ask you a two-parter, where does the win total land for you guys this season? And then do you think the Pats have a shot to make the playoffs?
Yeah. So I think the win ceiling is probably 12. I think that's the ceiling. I don't think it's going to get better than that.
The ceiling is 12. The ceiling is 12. Okay. Please continue.
The ceiling is a 12. Yes. So, so I think I would put my money on 9, okay. 9 wins for the Patriots this season. So I would take the over. And again, like, how do the Patriots get to those 12 wins, those best case scenario wins? You know, that's coming down to the final play and, you know, Drake May, I don't know, making miracles happen on the field, you know, late in the fourth quarter. I think that's how those wins happen. If it happens.
Drake May showed a propensity for some of those heroics at the end of last year, for sure. Damn, man, ceiling at 12. So let's talk through that, because obviously the Bills are in the division. The Dolphins are in the division. We have the Jets. I would say you guys are obviously the most improved team out of the three also Rams from last season. I think the Jets have tried to stabilize the ship after the Aaron Rodgers disaster. And I think the Dolphins on paper are probably the least improved from last year. They addressed some of their trouble spots in the trenches, but to me, not enough to make a lot of market changes. But they also still have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and if healthy, Tua Tagovailoa, who is only 2.5 seasons removed from operating one of the most efficient offenses in NFL history. So there is a dark horse sleeper element to the Dolphins this year as well. So to get to 12, you guys would, I feel like, need to split at the very least with the Bills and then sweep the Jets and sweep the Dolphins. So let me ask you this. Do you feel like immediately you guys are the second best team in the division behind the Bills, or are you guys challenging this year in your mind the supremacy of Buffalo?
No, I don't think we're there yet. You can continue to have your moment in the spotlight.
Bills, thank Mafia. You so much. two generations of dominance, Brandon. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, as long as demigod, you know, Josh Allen continues to reign supreme in this conference.
The team. I just love Josh Allen. Sorry, this is a Drake May conversation. Keep going.
Yes. Yeah. No. It's fun. yeah. I think it, you know, you'll see your Bills at the top of the division, followed by the Patriots, followed by Miami, and then who are the Jets and what are they? But the same team they've always been. So
poor Jared,
no change
not
there.
Listening. So you've got the Dolphins slotted in ahead of the Jets. Yeah. There's a world where I could see that happening. All right, man. All right. So let's wrap it up here. I've got one final question for you. And then per your request, we're going to do a custom fantasy football section for you. We're going to dismiss our normal degenerate sports gambling nature that we have when JJ is on the pod. We're going to shift gears to fantasy football, which is a nose in your wheelhouse. But one more question about the Pats here before we change gears to that. Give us one thing. It could be a storyline. It could be a player. Anything. Give us one thing about the Pats that you think our listeners should keep an eye on this offseason that nobody else is talking about. I think you might be muted. Are you muted? You're welcome.
Thanks, Dan. So, you know, it's interesting that nobody's talking about it. Because I think there's a lot of talk happening. So a player that, you know, I don't think most people have ever heard of, Efton Chisholm III.
Have
you heard
not.
Of Efton?
I have not. And I keep a pretty close eye
okay.
on you guys.
So I'm going to tell you something interesting about Efton Chisholm III that most people don't know because they've never heard of him. He broke a single season record in receptions that was previously held by, who do you think?
A Patriots player, is that what we're talking about?
No. So Efton Chisholm yep. III is a Patriots player, but he broke a single season record in receptions. Mm-hmm. I'll give you another hint. At Eastern
Cooper
Washington, Cup. Whose
Cooper
record
Cup.
Did?
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
You're
yes,
welcome.
Thank you for playing. He broke Cooper Kupp's single season reception record. Yes, and so I think caught every single ball almost that was thrown to him and showed a lot of chemistry with Drake May in camp. I think he's going to earn himself a spot on the roster and a place in this offense with
what's this
Josh
guy's
McDaniels.
Name again?
So. Efton Chisholm
III. Chisholm III. How pissed.
It's a great name.
But how pissed is Stefon Diggs going to be if he loses targets to Efton Chisholm III in his first and maybe only year in New England?
Yeah.
That'd be wild. Wild. So many reasons yep. to keep an eye on that storyline. Yep. I love it, Brandon. All right. Brandon, per your request, Brandon's Fantasy Football Corner. I have not played in a proper PPR league in a very long time. I do weekly fantasy where you're basically buying new players with a fake cash threshold. You're putting in a bunch of money and I lose ultimately to professional gamblers on a bunch of sports books that are using algorithms to pick all their players. So I donate about $100 every season to playing daily fantasy in the NFL. You, sir, are a traditionalist. You have a league, you have friends, right? You do the whole draft thing, all that kind of stuff. So fantasy is like, this is your bag. This is where I happily take a back seat. So if you could, for any of our listeners at home, standard 10-team PPR league, who are some of your top first round selections that you would recommend to our listeners to target this season?
Okay. So I've played in leagues before with, Bills fans. And I notice a fond approach of taking Josh Allen in the first round. There's very few, pretty much never a circumstance in which you want to take a quarterback in the first round. But if you're going to take a quarterback, to everyone listening, you better be a hardcore Bills fan because you're going to take Josh Allen in the first round. Now, for everybody else, for everybody else. I personally like to take a wide receiver in the first round. Your names like Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, excellent options depending where you are in the draft position. I think there's a big question mark around Christian McCaffrey, like there always is. He's often, you know, a very early pickup for folks. I'm not that type of gambler. When I am making my first round pick, the most important pick of your entire draft, you want a sure thing. Is Ashton Jeanty really exciting as a rookie? Sure is. I'm seeing on Fantasy Pros that the current average draft position for Jeanty is 7. So a lot of excitement, a lot of enthusiasm though, around
especially
that.
That feels high in Las Vegas. Geno Smith will elevate that program, but what kind of unit is he running behind? Yeah.
Yes. So that's not a gamble I'm willing to make. I want a sure thing. I want the known guaranteed number one on an offense. And if we're talking PPR, you want to take a wide receiver. I'm just not really the type of person, or the type of fantasy player to take a running back or a quarterback in the first round. In most formats, I'm going wide receiver. So for this upcoming draft, I think Amon-Ra is a sure thing. And Ja'Marr Chase, currently number one ADP. So can't go wrong with him. Justin Jefferson is also
Like Cincinnati's offense to me, it's such a volume shooter's offense, right? Because that defense looks like it's going to be bad again this year. Trey Hendrickson holding out. They haven't signed Stewart, their number 17 overall pick at the edge yet. Secondary is still a mess. No one knows what's going on with that. It feels like Cincinnati's going to have to win a lot of shootouts again this year, and Burrow's going to have some padded stats. Let me ask you this with regard to Cincinnati. Are both Chase, obviously, but is Higgins also, because of the volume that those two guys are going to see this season, is Higgins also a viable first-round selection in a 10-team league?
A viable first-round selection in a 10-team league, no. No, I wouldn't waste a first-round pick on T. Higgins. I do think he's a phenomenal player, you know, and by no shred of doubt, like very, very talented. But I also think that Ja'Marr Chase is a special talent, like, you know, a generational talent. So, and Joe Burrow is good enough to have both of these guys eat. But I do think Ja'Marr Chase takes the lead there.
No, definitely. So. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. I am not yet fully, I'm like kicking the rust off for the pod. I'm not fully into my stats yet. I've just started rewatching some film from last year to get reacclimated, but I was pulling up some of my stat packages from last year, and I was looking at catch rate because I'm obsessed with catch rate. I think catch rate is like the new yak to me. Like if you got a guy that can secure the ball in an offense, he just has more opportunities to do things. And I took a look at Amon-Ra St. Brown. You want to take a guess what his drop rate for yards, for passes targeted 10 or more yards downfield was last year? Just guess. Drop rate.
What's his drop rate?
How many passes did he drop at what rate?
I'm going to say 0.8%.
Dude caught.
Wow.
Everything. He caught everything.
That's really good.
On high degree of difficulty passes. So no, he that dude's
that's
S-tier.
Wild.
That dude is S tier. I think he's a great recommendation.
Yeah. He's one of few players in the NFL that can get 16 receptions in a game, that can get 18 receptions in a single game. He is such a volume play. Yeah, he's so good.
He's just fascinating, fascinating to watch on the field. All right. First rounders are easy. Let's, because this is your fantasy quarter, let's kick up the degree of difficulty. Give me 3 late round sleepers that folks are going to need to help fill their roster at the end of the draft?
Okay. So I talked about how I like to take wide receivers early, especially in the first round. There is a strategy that's called zero RB, in which like first three, four, maybe even five rounds, you take straight wide receiver every round. So, yeah.
Savage.
They've run obviously statistics on the no RB strategy. And it has a slightly higher, you know, than 50% success rate. So, I'm always looking for in the late rounds value at the running back position. So the first player I want to mention is a name that most people are very familiar with. This is the household name, but we will be seeing this older running back in Houston this year. That is Nicholas
Chubb.
I think if you're looking for value, again, you want a name that's familiar that has potential, right? So I think a Nick Chubb, who's currently going very, very late ADP, is a name that I would stash on my roster to wait and see, right? Because again, there's that name recognition. We've seen him do incredible things with the football in his hands. So Nick Chubb comes to mind. Another player who I think is due for a breakout season is Romeo Doubs out of Green Bay. I think he is a late round sleeper pick. There was a lot of questions on Green Bay's offense last season as to who was going to be, you know, first in the pecking order and how the ball was going to be distributed. I think Romeo Doubs is, you know, one of the better talents now with a little bit more NFL experience under his belt. So I do think he's going to have a good season this year and has a lot of late round value currently in the ADP. I'm going to mention another wide receiver. That is Xavier Leggett out of Carolina. Didn't look great with Bryce Young last season, but lest us not forget what Xavier Leggett was in college. I think he's a very, very talented wide receiver. And, you know, hopefully this offseason, Carolina would have built him a much, much larger role in the offense and gotten more chemistry with Bryce Young. Again, fantasy players looking for value in the late rounds, you can roll the dice on Xavier Leggett.
I like the pairing with him and Tet McMillan, too, their rookie first round wide receiver selection. And Bryce Young, hopefully not a mirage at the end of the season. I am a Bills fan first, but I am also a football fan. And the more good QBs there are in the league, the more entertaining my Sundays are. And at the end of the year when the Bills had stuff wrapped up, I started straying on my NFL Network Red Zone to like other teams that were playing when the Bills weren't. And Bryce Young really caught my eye at the end of last season. So I really hope that's for real for that young kid. Great for him, but also great for us NFL fans that could get to watch one more hopefully quality QB strap on the pads weekend in and weekend out. So Brandon, love the takes and love having you on the pod, sir. Much appreciated you filling in for JJ. You are welcome back, of course, anytime you want to join us here on Buffalo Bread. This is a safe space for Patriots fans as they enter their Drake May era. And your hopefully not turbulent Stephon Diggs era, but we'll see.
Well, thank you again for having me. I appreciate, again, talking Patriots a little more.
Yes, absolutely, sir. Episode. And for all of you listening at home, thank you for joining us. Like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Spotify. And as always, go Bills.